Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Tasting Temptation, a Sapphic Age Gap Romance by J.J. Arias. Narrated by Kingsley Rose. Chapter 1. Everything yields if the knife is sharp and the chef is relentless. And Slade was relentless. Music slammed against her eardrums as she held her boning knife tight and willed the chaos of dinner service to disappear. Thank you, Tim Cook, for noise-canceling headphones. She sliced into the tiny squab breasts with surgical precision, just as she'd done for hours. Nearing the end of a long Friday night, Slade could probably prepare the unimaginative squab roulade with pistachio and pomegranate with her eyes closed, but she'd never take that chance. She was so focused she ignored the damp bandana covering her long, wavy brown hair and the unfortunate delight of sweating through her kitchen whites. From the edge of her peripheral, she sensed someone getting her attention.
Fire those little birds. Hate squab all day, chef.
Slade couldn't hear Expo, but she'd gotten remarkably good at reading lips in the last 3 months. At 27, Slade already had more experience than half the people in the room. Definitely more than the recent culinary school grads on either side of her. They didn't know their butts from a bon marie. In her decade of working in kitchens, this was the first time she needed to be as disconnected from her surroundings as she could manage. And it wasn't even because of the demotion.
Heard,
Slade called back in a commanding shout she projected from her diaphragm. It was the way she'd been taught to respond by her first mentor. A self-described brassy broad who'd never taken an ounce of shit and taught a 15-year-old girl to do the same. Checking the temp on the roulade she was poaching in goose fat, even though her internal clock told her it was exactly medium rare, Slade smiled to herself. She'd gotten it to within a fraction of perfection. Satisfied, but only for a moment, she pulled it off the heat and began plating two dishes with protein she'd already allowed to rest. It might have been a nice night if she'd been allowed to stay in her bubble. If all she had to do was rock with Patty Smith and cook. If she'd remained ignored and forgotten by the executive chef, a dude bro in his 60s who thought offering everyone coke was cool rather than cringy, a man unlovingly referred to by all behind his back as Chef Fuckwad. But the moment Slade noticed the server breaching the kitchen doors with an uneaten squab dish, it was like looking into a crystal ball. She lurched into the future, and not a single potential outcome was favorable. She gripped the handle of her knife tighter and tried to talk herself into standing down, into not reacting. You need this fucking job, Slade. Whatever he says, just nod. She channeled her mother's voice, letting it echo in her chest. You have rent, car insurance, bills. Just nod and say yes, chef. Gritting her teeth, she focused on what her hands were doing without direct instruction from her brain. Maybe he won't. The flicker of hope was snuffed out the moment Fuckwad started toward her, returned plate in hand. Everything in his strut said he was going to humiliate her in front of the entire kitchen staff, that he'd been waiting for months to catch her in a mistake, or perceived mistake. Just keep your mouth shut, she repeated to herself. It was good advice, but her body wasn't getting the message. Anger rose with every obnoxious step Fuckwad took toward her. Slade yanked off her headphones the moment Janis Joplin told her the meaning of freedom. The noise of the kitchen should have bombarded her as soon as she lost her noise canceling, but there was nothing but the sound of simmering pots, sizzling meat, and 16 people holding their collective breath. When Fuckwad dropped the plate on her station, creating a risk of cross-contamination Slade would have to resolve before getting back to work. Slade put her knife down and met his pale green eyes. He stared at her expectantly, but Slade refused to react to the dramatic display. If he had something to say, he would. It only took 3 tense seconds before he broke.
You know how I feel about my food getting sent back,
he said as if she didn't know that he had fuck all to do with designing the menu or anything on it. Reductive as it was. It's not that Slade didn't know she had a lethal case of RBF. It's that she couldn't find the will to change it. Not when remaining silent was consuming all available energy. uncomfortable. The guy to Slade's left shifted away from her. If he was trying to avoid being collateral damage, he was playing it wrong. Insecure frauds like Fuckwad only attacked the weak and afraid. Slade had never been accused of those virtues.
Undercooked squab.
It's not undercooked. Slade countered before she could stop herself. It's exactly medium rare, which is as done as it can be without becoming rubbery and inedible.
That's not what the customer said.
Then they're wrong. Slade crossed her arms over her chest. Taste it. She flicked her gaze toward the untouched dish sitting between them. Anger flared on Fuckwad's face, even as he laughed.
You think I'm going to eat raw?
It's not raw. It's medium.
If you interrupt me one more time,
he roared, leaning in so his face was within chomping distance.
If you so much as speak again, you're out on your ass, James.
The use of her very unwanted nickname, a nickname this asshat invented to humiliate her, nearly made Slade lose her grip on herself, but she held fast, digging her blunt fingernails into her own elbow to redirect the energy, itching to fly out of her and crush Fuckwad under the rubble of his obliterated ego. When she didn't respond, Fuckwad grinned. He misunderstood her silence the way he probably misunderstood every other human signal. Slade trembled like the earth before a seismic catastrophe. But she didn't take the bait. Fuckwad pulled the shit on everyone. It was only a matter of time before he'd gotten to her. She'd always known that, and yet logic and reason were doing very little to quell her irritation.
It's like I tell all you green baby chefs.
His attention swept over them like an axe swinging from the ceiling. Slade resisted the lure again. She knew she wasn't a baby anything. She'd cooked with the best. She even had the receipts to prove it. But this moment wasn't about facts. It was all about the fragility of the man's intent on berating her. But she refused to give him what he wanted. She would never cower. Not to anyone.
Basics, guys. Basics. What do I say all the time?
He looked around as if anyone was going to answer his rhetorical question.
It's all about the basics. And what could be more basic than protein temperature?
Slade tipped her head to the side, restraint slipping. If he says basics one more time, I'm going to chiffonade his face. He zeroed in on her again.
Rule number one is don't give our distinguished clientele food poisoning, James, he thundered. And what is this, James?
He pointed at her textbook presentation like it was something unfortunate stuck under his shoe. When he looked back at her, his face was violently red and closer than ever. Slade didn't move despite inhaling a blast of Fuckwad's spearmint gum. It wasn't the flagrant disrespect of her personal space that broke her. It wasn't the screaming or the endless pairs of eyes trying and failing not to stare in secondhand horror. It wasn't even the nickname wielded like a slur. It was the gum. The gum blasting his palate. The veritable symphony of artificial flavorings and chemical compounds. The petri dish of sorbitol, glycerol, and polyethylene. The polymer science experiment obscuring his most precious tool. His damn taste buds. Taste buds he obviously didn't use to taste anything coming out of his kitchen. Taste it, Slade repeated. Demeanor deceptively calm and tone even despite her bubbling emotions. Fuckwad's eyes widened in a way that might have been funny if Slade hadn't been holding back felonious impulses. His flush deepened, spreading over his throat.
Do you even understand your place here?
He slammed his fist on the counter, sending plates rattling.
You don't speak to me. You say nothing other than chef, yes chef, and do what the fuck you're told. Do you see what this says?
He pointed to executive chef embroidered on his pristine white coat.
You don't tell me what to do in my kitchen.
He was seething in the way only a person with no real power could. Slade put him out of his misery because she considered herself kind and generous.
Taste the food from your kitchen and tell me it's wrong, chef.
Slade repeated. All around her, people moved away like she was radioactive. Like they didn't want to be guilty by association. Slade didn't blame them, but she did feel sorry for them. None of them would amount to shit without a spine, not in this world too ready to grind meat and bone and nerve.
One more word, James.
He bared his teeth. His body vibrating with hatred, Slade was almost starting to take personally.
One more word and you're gone. Or is your enormous head so far up your own ass you can't even hear me?
Slade took a long, deep breath. She struggled to remember why she needed this job. Why anything would be worth the price of her dignity. Why she shouldn't choose herself over a shitty paycheck. Nothing came to her. All she could think about was the bone-deep satisfaction of a bruised male ego, of the satisfying tingle warming her marrow. When her lips curled into a smirk and her attention locked on fuckwad, she didn't say a word. She said too,
get fucked.
10 minutes later, Slade was tossing her knife bag in the passenger seat of the car, a vintage red BMW named Margaret she loved more than most people. A car she'd inherited from her grandfather who kept it in perfect condition. At least Margaret couldn't be repossessed. Eyes closed. She dropped against the headrest instead of peeling out of the parking lot with her middle finger in the air. Watching fuckwad devolve into a sputtering tornado of indignation had been thrilling. But now that she was alone in her car, she remembered how long it had taken her to find a stupid job that paid okay, even if it was beneath her experience. Lovely that you remember that now, genius. Regret rose cold and repugnant in the back of her throat. Shit. Now what? She shut her eyes tighter until she saw tiny silver dots in the darkness. Maybe I'll cook on social media and become an overnight sensation before I end up on the street. This place was never going to be her second chance. Resigned that she couldn't go back and make different decisions, she threw the car in drive and left the parking lot. She refused to doubt herself. She'd made the right choice. She'd rather flip burgers than put up with another fuckwad. She was pulling into her designated spot outside her apartment complex when her phone rang. Tina calling at midnight only meant one thing. I got fired, Slade said when she picked up. The January night was moonless and unseasonably cold for Miami. Slade hurried to get inside.
Duh, bitch. Why do you think I'm calling?
Behind Tina was the familiar clamor of a kitchen being cleaned and sanitized at the end of service. At least she wouldn't have to do that tonight. Slade tucked her case under her arm and tossed her backpack over her shoulder.
Who told you?
She jogged up the exterior stairs to her third floor apartment.
Who didn't tell me?
Tina laughed.
Listen, I have a private chef gig tomorrow. 2 weeks cooking for rich ladies on Palm Beach. You're going in my place.
Tina, before you waste your breath, I already emailed and said you were going in to cover for me.
I don't have the time to do it.
Then why did you book it? Slade asked, only a little winded after a year of taking the stairs every day.
Methinks you're full of shit.
She fished for the keys in the pocket of her loose chef's pants.
You just feel bad that your loser friend.
No, ma'am. We're not doing this dance tonight. I have an entire station to clean and I don't have time for your weak-ass pity party. Slade's smile came easily. Tina was the best friend she'd ever had. Despite how competitive the culinary world was, they'd only ever pushed each other to be better and supported each other.
I'll send you the details,
Tina said in her intimidating chef voice.
It pays enough to cover you for a month or two until you find something permanent. You're going.
Slade sighed and flipped on the lights in her small apartment. She hated the idea of cooking for some stuck-up millionaires who wanted nothing but caviar and champagne. But Tina was right. She needed the money unless she wanted to go back to her mother's couch. Gratitude pushed through Slade's mild self-loathing.
Thanks, T. I owe you. Shut up, don't be late, and remember to dazzle them with your charm.
Slade laughed. I love you too. Chapter 2.
How could Manny do this to me?
Ruby threw her head back against the front seat of Marissa's Tesla, like she was filming the dramatic climax of a soap opera, her gesture worthy of an imaginary spotlight. Gripping the steering wheel, Marissa pulled onto the highway taking them from Miami to Palm Beach. Instead of cursing her luck for losing the coin toss to Christy, she took a deep breath. Marissa was practiced at keeping her poker face in working order. After a decade as a legal correspondent on cable news, and as a prosecutor a few years before that. She was good at keeping her brain fast and her mouth slow. She wasn't going to fall into the shit-talk the almost ex-husband trap, not until she was sure Ruby wouldn't be going back to him again.
To kick me out of my own house?
Ruby wailed before pulling the hat meant to tame her rusty red curls over her face.
How could he do that?
Because he's an asshole, and we all told you not to move out to prove a point because he wasn't going to let you back in. If you remembered anything from law school, you'd know you ousted yourself, sis. Divorce is tricky, Marissa said from her place of experience. It brings out the worst in everybody, she added, trying not to sound as cynical as she felt.
Do you think there's someone else?
Ruby flung the hat off of her face, revealing eyes the same reddish brown as her hair. Obviously. Why else would he start waxing his back? How about we focus on this retreat Felicity dreamed up for us? She replied in hopes that the entire hour and 20-minute drive wouldn't be covered in Manny's grubby fingerprints. It was a long shot, given that every Thursday night dinner for the preceding 3 months had devolved into a seminar on the endless misdeeds of Ruby's estranged husband.
God, Felicity, Ruby grumbled. I told her I had too much going on to be away so many days, but does she listen? No. She always thinks she knows everything, like being an heiress makes you right all the time, like she's so quote-unquote life goals.
Marissa rolled her eyes and tried not to remind Ruby that the people with actual jobs had taken time off to help her through her crisis before someone drowned her in a bathtub, that her frenemies at Pilates would survive without her for a couple of weeks. But she reminded herself how much she loved her friend instead. When Marissa had been the first among the four to leave her wife 5 years earlier, it was Ruby who'd whisked them away on a ski trip. The next year, they'd all taken Christy on a cruise when she served her ex-husband with divorce papers, and they'd created an impenetrable fortress around Felicity when her unexpected day arrived. It was something of a tradition among them to do this, even if the notion of 2 weeks in a rented mansion with Ruby was leeching the generosity from Marissa's spirit. It was noon when they pulled up to a sprawling, ultra-modern mansion. Being at the edge of the exclusive island would have been impressive enough, but Felicity had gotten them a place directly on the Atlantic Ocean. The only word Marissa had for it was stunning. Ruby leaned forward to soak up the manor, while Marissa followed the sleek cement path to where Felicity's Rover was parked in the open 6-car garage.
You'd think after all these years she'd get tired of flashing her millions.
Girl, if you make one more rude-ass comment, I'm going to let you out of this car with something in your nose. Marissa joked her serious warning. It was enough that she put up with her complaining. She wasn't going to let Ruby take her misplaced feelings out on their friend. It wasn't Felicity's fault that Ruby signed an unfavorable prenup without reading it or telling any of them about it before agreeing.
Jesus, you're kidding!
Ruby pulled down the visor and before covering her mouth.
Why didn't you tell me?
Marissa opened her car door. I was being mindful of your feelings. Let's practice that, yeah? She got out of the car without waiting for an answer. The lungful of cool sea air on the bright South Florida winter day was exactly the palate cleanser she needed after the ride.
Manny checked his reflection every 10 seconds,
Ruby said when she joined Marissa in pulling luggage out of the car.
He was so obsessed with himself. Even narcissists would be like, dude, take it down a notch.
She shook her head and reached for her Louis Vuitton duffel. Marissa bit the inside of her cheek and considered the ethics of putting a low-grade shock collar on Ruby, one that responded to a single trigger word.
Finally, I was going to send out a search party.
Felicity appeared in the oversized doorway, with her long bottle blonde hair flowing in the briny breeze. Tall and naturally curvy, Felicity was a Cuban-British Jessica Rabbit, an Amazonian figure who didn't know how not to draw every eye in the room she floated into. Born in Miami and raised in Kensington, Felicity's British accent was a light dusting on her Miami twang. Behind Felicity, two servers in starched white shirts emerged from the house, each one holding a Collins glass filled with a bright red drink and exotic flower garnish on a tray. As they neared, Marissa noticed a small bite of something next to the colorful drink. She shut the trunk and rolled her two suitcases toward them. In a flash, more staff materialized and whisked away her things.
What's with the theatrical greeting?
Marissa asked while kissing Felicity on the cheek. In flat, Marissa was 5 inches shorter than Felicity's nearly 6 feet. She was the only person who ever made her feel small without trying. Felicity gave her a squeeze before whispering directly into her ear so as to not be overheard.
If I keep her mouth busy, she can't prattle on about him.
Marissa laughed and hoped it was true. While Felicity greeted Ruby, Marissa picked up the snack and the drink. The moment the bite-sized morsel hit Marissa's tongue, an unexpected symphony of flavors sparked across her taste buds. She closed her eyes, letting the bite captivate her senses. The base was a buttery, flaky pastry that dissolved instantly, giving way to an explosion of smooth and incredibly light, tangy goat cheese. Then came the surprise of pistachio. The nutty flavor arrived like a crescendo, toasting the cheese's tartness and adding texture. And finally, something sweet. Peach? Apricot. She couldn't tell, but she craved more of it.
You okay?
Felicity's arm around her waist brought Marissa back to her body.
Are you a stroke risk? What's happening, darling?
Did you taste that?
Marissa pointed at the food Ruby was in the process of depositing into her mouth. Felicity grinned, kept her arm around her, and ushered her inside.
What did you think? I'd skimp out on our Cubanita-flavored First Wives Club.
She laughed and turned her from the foyer to the gleaming kitchen.
Only the best for our battered heart. If we want, I can even ask the staff to stay until we depart.
Marissa was sipping her pomegranate rum drink, rum that undoubtedly came from the billion-dollar Velasco rum empire Felicity inherited from her mother's side of the family, when the woman working in the kitchen looked up at them. In the space of a held breath, Marissa was confronted with 39 years of internalized misogyny she thought she'd excised from her system. She'd made assumptions from the moment she tasted the food. She'd pictured a man the likes of Wolfgang Puck and Thomas Keller. But it wasn't the ghost of Anthony Bourdain who was popping a tray of something fragrant in the oven. All at once, she wished she'd done something more with her light brown highlighted hair than iron it straight and leave it loose around her shoulders. Wished she'd worn something that showed off her ample curves better than a loose cable-knit sweater. Even her jeans weren't tight since she'd chosen comfort over appearance. God, couldn't she have at least gotten a spray tan? She'd been working so much lately, she hadn't seen the sun in months.
Marissa,
Felicity gestured toward the 20-something woman in the pristine white chef's coat.
This is Chef Slade. She'll be preparing orgasmic delights for us while we're here.
Felicity winked at Marissa.
And Chef, if you've ever followed the media frenzy around any public trials, you've seen Marissa's face on your TV explaining all the legal minutiae you can stomach.
Slade moved toward them with an unhurried grace, drying her hands on the towel hung over her shoulder. Her brown hair, long and wavy, spilled down her back in a ponytail just messy enough to be cool and intentional rather than sloppy. Her hazel eyes were huge and perceptive, holding Marissa's gaze with an open directness that was excitingly disarming. Eyes that were so bright against her golden olive skin. She had a simple black t-shirt under her chef's coat. Rolled up sleeves revealed a geometric tattoo on her forearm, among other scattered symbols too small to decipher without staring. The minimalist jewelry and ink gave her an effortless edginess. Slade was no uptight head chef, and she was impossible to look away from. In her work, Marissa met all kinds of attractive people. She'd even sat next to a dazzling Diane Sawyer at a benefit once and had been unshaken. But despite all her training and experience, she was well and truly rattled. She blamed it on the unanticipated misogyny stumble and pulled it together.
Hi there,
Slade said with a voice so raspy and warm that Marissa didn't hear it. She felt it like confident fingers unbuttoning her jeans.
I wish I had more time to watch TV.
Marissa opened her mouth and nearly said something mortifying like your little ball was yummy, before arming her camera-ready smile instead. The pause bought her brain a moment to adjust to her surroundings. Thank you for the lovely bite. It was delicious. There was something in the way Slade responded to her. Not with words, but with the very tip of her tongue moistening her full lips before the corner of her mouth twitched with amusement. That set Marissa's skin on fire. She imagined her reacting to the use of the word bite. Had Slade pictured Marissa's teeth scraping her flawless skin? I aim to please. Slade replied like her syllables were sex and sweat and husky moans. Jesus. Maybe Christy was right. I do need to get out more. In that moment, she couldn't even remember the last time she'd had sex. Maybe she'd never had it. Maybe she'd been born standing in that very spot. Manny made us drinks just like this on our honeymoon. Ruby's voice was a half wail as she clung to the glass in her hand like it was a time machine. Not just going back in time to when Manny loved her, but rewriting history to turn him into someone who did anything for her. At $1,000 a bottle, I doubt it. Felicity laughed. Manny used to be so thoughtful, Ruby continued, undeterred by their collective eye rolls. What happened to him? He always used to... Let's go see the pool, yeah? Felicity hooked her arm in Ruby's in a way that reminded Marissa of a comically oversized hook appearing from stage left. Christy is out by the fire pits and waiting for us. Wait until you see how the pool looks like it's flowing into the ocean. Marissa lingered behind, watching them go. She turned back to Slade, who was still regarding her with an amused expression. Ruby's going through a rough divorce. She explained from under a metric ton of secondhand embarrassment. Slade gave her a lopsided smile that Marissa had the overwhelming desire to taste. No need to explain. Cooking for broken hearts is my specialty. Marissa took another sip of her cocktail, the potent rum already making her feel a little drunk. Or maybe it was the way Slade leaned over the counter, a sliver of tattoo peeking from the edge of her clavicle. That's nice of you. She brought her attention back to Slade's face. To cook for the hearts you break. Slade's hazel eyes flickered with something new. Something dangerous. Maybe it's my heart that gets broken. Marissa's pulse jumped on a treadmill at the way Slade dragged out her words. The way her gaze dropped to her mouth before returning to her eyes. I'm not a betting man. Marissa cocked her head to the side. But I sincerely doubt you've ever cried into a pint of Rocky Road. You got me there. Slade chuckled, her eyes crinkling and revealing a tiny dimple in one cheek. I'm a rum raisin girl through and through. Marissa laughed. Rum raisin? What are you, 80? What? A 27-year-old can't have excellent taste in ice cream? God, there was that smirk again. It was a spike of heat in Marissa's skin, a jolt to her nervous system. Marissa! Felicity's head appeared from the open French door leading to the pool. All hands on deck, darling. Ruby just got an email about the cryo kids. No bueno. With a nod, Marissa resigned herself to her fate. She wasn't here on vacation, or to flirt with a hot woman a dozen years younger than her. She was here for Ruby, to deprogram her from the single-minded black hole she'd become. Duty calls, Marissa said before taking another boozy gulp. Well, anytime you want a personal tasting, you know where to find me. Slade picked up a knife and put a bunch of parsley on her cutting board. With effort, Marissa turned towards the massive doors leading to the pool area. But as she stepped outside into the bright winter sun, she felt Slade's gaze following her departure. The weight of it settled on Marissa's skin, leaving her flushed and thinking of tasting her. Chapter 3. Do we really have to do this crap? Christy stood in front of the mirror of her room and coaxed her natural dark curls into two fishtail braids. Marissa sipped her coffee where she sat on the edge of Christy's bed. Her room, exactly like Marissa's next door, was a huge suite facing the pool and ocean beyond. Modern and clean, the rooms not only had huge king-sized bed and modest sitting areas, but the most lavish private bathrooms Marissa has ever seen. Felicity had really outdone herself. We shouldn't call it crap. Marissa.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?